And this might be a bit controversial, bear with me, guys, because I'll clear it up. Now, there's loads of Turkish barbers. I would say 70 to 80% aren't Turkish, Kurdistan. Most of them come from southern Iraq. And, you know, they're great guys. You know, they're trying to do it right.
You know, to some extent, I find the provider almost detrimental to the process.
Absolutely.
You know, I know how to turn someone into, you know, a hairdresser or a barber. I've kept lots of mine. I've got several that have started with me at 16, one of whom is running one of our stores for me. We then do another 3 or 4 months of just getting all the stuff in that we couldn't because of the provider. So for us to be able to do that and seek funding, you know, I really don't buy into why we get £500 of a £9,500 grant.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why in an industry that puts billions into the coffers is the most transparent taxed industry on the high street. If the revenue want to come look in, they don't have to make an appointment. They've got to stroll through the front door.
Absolutely.
We're all there. And the only time I've seen barbers covered in the media in the run-up to this election was arsehole Tyson and Farage making big jokes about the fact that all barbershops on the high street are laundries for money laundering.
I know.
And you're just like, oh, fuck off. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban, and you're watching the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here to cut through the crap of the industry and give the answers, or at least try and find the answers to the problems that all of us as business owners struggle with every day. Thanks very much for watching. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here with Simon Shaw. Hi, Simon. Thanks for coming, mate.
Hi, Matt. You okay?
Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
I'll let you do a brief intro. I'm sure most people watching or listening know who you are. But if we could do a quick step through, I think everyone's always quite interested seeing you here now, how you got here, what were you doing in a previous life?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us on the Noble Barber Podcast. I've been watching your stuff, liked it,
enjoyed watching it.
So you've done a great job. So congratulations to you and Luke. Quick one, start my career in 1985. I mean, when you're doing seminars now and you look at the, some of the kids I'm teaching, I'm older than their parents. Yeah. It makes you feel ancient, but I'm only old body-wise in here and in here. I'm still 25.
Yeah.
I started my career in North England Dimensions, worked my way from a Saturday lad right through to being a director. Well, actually, with a big company like that, you get spotted on different, because they're, you know, with any big account, you know, we were doing lots of stuff for Goldwell. And then in 1995, Goldwell opened their academy in Mayfair. Yeah. And I was asked to do the some of the training courses for them in Mayfair. And I think from 95 to maybe 2000, I was doing lots of work in London. Got the taste for it. And while you're in London 3 days, you do things on a night, you go into shows, you're going to fellowship stuff. That's how all that bug started. And so you get picked up, and it was by chance I was doing something for the fellowship for Dimensions on a Saturday morning, and 10 people in the audience, a really bad time slot. But as we were talking off camera, I think, you know, sometimes you have to do things. And it used to cost us a lot of money to go do an half an hour presentation from Yorkshire, from Barnsley. And I know lots of people in that position, but I'm really honest, we didn't get paid to do it. We had to pay to go on those stages. I was a bit deflated, 10 people in an audience on a Saturday morning. But in that audience were somebody from Wall. And then I came off stage and they said, oh, we've been watching you, we'd love you to do some bits for us. And I started in probably 97, 98, doing exhibitions.
Yep.
Then I started doing a little bit of abroad work for them. And then in 2000, became UK Artistic Director. 2006, European Artistic Director. And in 2017, Global Artistic Director for Wall. 24 years in, you know, my job is responsible for making sure that everybody who's front-facing, anybody who talks to Iron Jews, whether that be a class, whether that be a stage, show, you know, Royal Albert Hall, or, you know, Nebworth College, my job is to teach them how to present, how to set up our seminars, how to set up our shows. And it's something that, you know, from a presenting point of view, I think I've done okay over the years. And keep producing teams and keep producing superstars.
Yeah, no, you had a great energy. I mean, first time I properly met you was at Barber Connect last month, and having watched your stage show, you know, you get a proper energy off of that. It was a great show.
Thanks.
Really was very good. But one of the bits that I've been wanting to kind of get you on for is, like you say, you've kept working these young teams, these young people coming through. And some of them are still with you, but you're always introducing these newer and younger little superstars that are coming through, but they have that discipline. They have a really professional approach. Is that a lot of work?
Well, I think, you know, we're very selective who we pick. I always think in life it's easy to deselect somebody.
Mm.
Just get rid of them. The hardest job in the world is to select the right people and then make sure you train through them. Don't give in. Keep working. I do run a tight ship. I always think that a thin band of fear and a thick band of respect.
Mm.
So there is a fear factor.
Yep.
No one will cross that line with me. You know, my job is to look at the talent. And then once I've found the talent, as you know, the guys would tell you, you're not in straight away. It's within a 6-month period. You know, we'll go meet them on their own turf, go meet them, go out for a meal with them, might meet the partners and make sure that they come from good stock and making sure that everybody's going to fit in the family. Because if we've got 15, 16 presenters in the UK, I can fetch somebody in. And it's like putting a fox in the rabbit that you've got to make sure that the one that's coming in is going to blend in. And touch wood, you know, we've been successful with that. You know, we've got some really good guys.
Yeah, I mean, you had to run. I mean, this year we had the Barber Connect and Hair Con running kind of simultaneously.
Tell me about it.
And you were, I don't know how many others did both, but you were running between the two with a team at each.
Mm-hmm.
Was that difficult choosing who was where, or with your team, are you quite happy that you can throw anyone off the bench and onto it?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes when we get asked to do satellite stages, so like for instance at Connect, the HJ had a modern barber stand.
Yep.
So for me, it would be easy to send, I ain't got anybody that's weak, but it would be easy to send a younger member of the team, keep all the real hot shots and the real experienced people on the wall stage.
Yeah,
but for me, no, if we do satellite stuff, I pick the strongest people because I know they can carry it off.
Yeah.
So Michael Damiano would go on the modern barber stage and he'd turn up and there'd be 10 people in the audience and within 20 minutes, there'd be 200 because he draws them in. For Connect and Aircon, it was difficult because I had to leave Alan Beak, who's one of my, you know, as you know, anybody knows Alan Beak from Ruger Barbers, he's a superstar. And, you know, I asked Alan 3 months prior, look, this is my thoughts. You're going to be me there at Manchester. And he led it fantastic. You know, we had James Parr, Stacey Wright, Cal News and Dean Gleeson travelling. And one of the things that I do for Wall as well is, and for our team, is that Cal and Dean were travelling between both.
Oh, okay.
And we had a driver to take them between both. So for me, they're younger and it's like, it's exciting times. There's going to be no extra money. But what I will do for you, I'll condition you that in between the venues, you're not doing any driving. You can sit, relax, read a book, you know, chill out in a car, have a driver to, I won't say chauffeur, but that we had a driver that were taking them between venues. And so
nice,
we get them nice and conditioned.
Yeah, no, they did very, very well. And you're saying I mean, obviously we all know Wall here as being a very strong brand and a strong team. Is the same in Europe? Is the same globally? Does it carry the same gravity throughout the world?
Well, I think we're 105 years old now as a brand. And so the education set up across the globe is strong.
Yeah.
You know, we have teams all across different continents, from the US down to India, across the Southeast Asia. You've got teams in Europe. So, yeah, it's strong everywhere. But it's not like ours.
Excellent.
As is, I always think.
I mean, I do still think, you know, our hair and barbering industry seems to still keep quite a high mantle.
Mm. Yeah. And for me, it's always about producing winners and making sure that they're formidable on stage as well as off stage. And you know, you sell yourself when you've spoke to the guys. It's kind of, you get a nice vibe off them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Have you found that? You know, we were talking earlier about the amount of youngsters that sign up very early with brands and products as ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had anyone that you've had a bit of an eye on that you thought, oh, that could be a goer, and then you turn around and they've signed with someone else and it takes them off the ticket? Or if they've done a little spell with someone else, would they still be able to come over to Wall?
Not in my eyes. I'll never say never, but we've never been a brand that crosses across where somebody else has done. So, and it's not from us. Sometimes I think some of the other brands have got some good presenters, but I think of them, they've for like 1 year or 4 years been with another brand saying, this is the best clipper.
Yeah.
This is, and then you're going to come across to us and say the same story. Mm. It will get lost.
Yeah.
Now, I'm never saying never, but in my 24 years, we've never done that. But yes, there is a few people who have tried to
I'd have them.
Yeah, I've tried to drag them in and then I'm just like, nah. And you know what? I've watched their careers afterwards and thought, right decision.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's not many that I think, or any, I can count them on one hand probably, that I think them's the ones that got away.
Mm. Yeah, oh, fair play. So obviously with Wiles' attitude to training, you're, you know, 24 years and still enthusiastic approach to training. The big thing I wanted for us to talk about was the training issue in our industry, the vast, I mean, we seem to have so many people either coming into it, wanting to come into it, working hard. I get so many direct messages from people wanting to get into, wanting to do a part-time course, wanting to ask me what the best 12-week course is and all this kind of stuff. And we've not really seemed to have mastered the apprenticeship. Mm. Yeah, there's a few people doing it, but it's slim. And I think it's really difficult to, there's no incentive for employers financially to do it. Mm-hmm. We have the self-employed model, so we've not got as many employers to start apprenticeships. And then there doesn't seem to be this mentoring program anywhere or graduate program for these enthusiastic people who spend $8,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 to do a 12-week course and then can't get a gig because essentially they're not experienced enough. So if we do that in bits, what's your take on the apprenticeship?
I think on the apprenticeships, what I'd like to see is, colleges have done some investment in. So when people say to me, oh, you get them out of college, you've got to retrain them, there's going to be a certain commerciality that you're going to have to give them. Mm. But colleges have improved so much over the last 5 or 6 years. Some of them have made them into bespoke barber shops as well, where they're just doing barber training, getting somebody out of industry to do the barbering qualification. So when I hear people say, you've got to retrain them, when were your last visit to a college? Oh, when I trained 15 years ago. Yeah. You need to go back then. So that's first thing.
Yep.
Go visit a college that's going to train your apprentice through the MVQs. See if you're happy with that. Secondly, I'd love to see training providers that get the contracts to split the money with the salon owner, which incentivizes them because all the money goes across to the training provider through the contract per head. And there's a little amount that goes to the salon owner or the barbershop owner. I'd like to see more of a synergy and a partnership where if there's a $4,000 pot for the MVQ that you get 1,800 or $2,000, the training provider gets them. You're going to do all training.
Yeah.
What they've got to do is they've got to work that training around the modules that they're going to tick off. But you're doing it all.
We're doing all the training. Absolutely.
All of it. And unless a training provider comes to me and says, hey, hold on a minute, we do a lot of the training, then show me.
Yeah.
What my experience is, it's a box ticking exercise and the barbershop or the salon does a lot of the work. Well, I think to get this more motivated to fetch apprentices back into our industry, you need to be motivated as salon owners to have an incentive. And that's my view on apprentices.
Yeah. But yeah, we've seen, with our guys that we use, exactly that. You know, we do all the training. They come along, tick boxes. We get the team ready for their EPA at the end of it all and they're signed off and done.
Yeah.
But there's this whole problem, really, that as an industry, certainly, well, it's just not taken seriously, I don't think. You know, it's not taken seriously as a space for training. Mm. You know, every course I see, and Wild do great ones, lots of people do these great improver courses, and I think I will only ever encourage barbers to keep training.
Mm-hmm.
But there doesn't seem to be any push to get apprentices going.
No, I know.
And I don't see how, short of us being a proper licensed industry, how we get to that.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we're trying to do at the fellowship. Barry's continually working with all the organisations to try and get some synergy between the different types of organisations. I know Toby Dicker and Colette Osborne are campaigning quite hard for the VAT levels to drop. So, you know, there's lots of people working behind the scenes with government that's trying to do that. But for me, there needs to be a bit more excitement around because barbering's been the quickest growing industry within the air and beauty sector. But we're falling short a little bit on the incentive for apprentices. You touched on it there, you know, the 12-week stuff. Our courses are designed, you know, I make no bones about it. We're not going to take you from zero to hero.
Mm.
We're going to make you, if you're not that good on fading, within a day or a two-day course, we'll improve your fading techniques and give you things to work on.
Yep.
Same with classic. So we don't do from zero to where you are. I'd have to sit there for 12 weeks and to really watch this because the stories I hear afterwards aren't the best story in terms of, are they ready?
Well, I think that's the big issue that I seem to have. And I've spoken, you know, we've had Michael on here from London School of Barbering. I've spoken to Jos LaMonikos, who's hopefully be coming on again here shortly. And, you know, they're producing this kind of baseline, but we've not, our industry doesn't seem to, and I've not spoken to any barbers that are able to kind of bring the next graduate level that can take this relatively enthusiastic, has spent some money, wants to do it, and hey, maybe or maybe not has it, but to mentor them and get them through to the next stage, to kind of shorten that 12-month apprenticeship.
And I think you're right. I think there's a gap there. There's a massive gap there, you know. And I've always had this dream of, and it's just really, you know, separating from, we do education at Walt, but we're an electrical clip and brand. So first and foremost, we want to make electrical equipment and sell it.
Yeah.
Education comes as a backup to that. And so I have to be careful when I really want to spend money on education. It's all got to be carefully planned with marketing. But I have this dream about residential barber schools, boot camps, you know, where you get 25 guys who want to do it and girls, and you really work them for 6 to 9 months under this umbrella, and everybody's in there together. Can you imagine the camaraderie, the fun, the hard work?
Yeah.
It's almost like a Navy SEALs kind of program. You take away from what you've done.
Yeah.
This is something. And that's always been a dream of mine to do that.
But that's, I mean, you know, the vast amount of kind of, you know, barbers that are kind of making headway and I guess kind of pushing the industry forward at the moment, almost all of them are either hairdresser based that then converted, which I guess you're getting a lot at your academy, that a lot of hairdressers who great with a pair of scissors but very nervous around clippers. Or they're kind of, I guess, near our age and have done a full proper apprenticeship. There's this whopping great gap in between that as we've exploded and barbershops are everywhere, we've not filled this space to get training in.
No, we've not. And, you know, one of the biggest problems that I think a lot of people have in every town and every city, and you'll hear it, is like, they'll go on, and this might be a bit controversial, but hopefully, bear with me, guys, because I'll clear it up. You know, there's loads of Turkish barbers.
Yeah.
Well, if you go into these, I would say 70 to 80% aren't Turkish, the Kurds, Kurdistan. And most of them come from southern Iraq, which is a place called Selimania. And, you know, they're great guys. You know, they're trying to do it right. But what's happened is, the young guys have come in, they're watching a lot of the people who you see and maybe have interviewed. They've done really well. They've got a fantastic Instagram. They're getting endorsement off brands. You know, they might be driving a nice car. Then the 17, 18-year-old kid who goes in for his haircut and all of a sudden thinks, I want some of that.
Yeah.
That barber then trains him up and he's renting a chair off him. Before they know it, they're earning good money, $1,000 a week, and the training bit comes away.
Yeah.
And you're right, that's the gap. How do we get that back in? And there's an idea that I do have, is that if we can set up something where, again, there's a 3-week or 4-week period. Let's say you've had a young guy or a young girl that's come in. They've not gone to college, but they've learnt off you. So you're saying you can train them well.
Yep.
They can now cut hair well. They have no certification.
Yeah.
So they're going to be one of the stats that we look at and think we need to get our industry regulated.
Yeah.
We should have something then that's kind of set up where there is a 2 or 3 week course that you can go in, which the government and somebody writes it up with the MVQs. So whichever government, city and guilds, what's the other one? VCTC.
Yep.
Whichever awarding body gets behind it. And it's something which is called recognition of prior learning.
Yeah.
So you would have a format there that would stick to it. So you send, let's say, you send Johnny to us. Why do I always say Johnny or Little Pete? Mm-hmm. Fuck, that's, I don't got a fucking clue why we do that. I do apologise for swearing, by the way. I've got a mild form of Tourette's. But you send them to those and you say, right, first job is, can you do our shoe section? Can you do a basic fig? Can you do a low taper? And then take. You know he can because you've trained him.
Yeah.
But he's not. And then that is supported by an awarding body. So within a 2 or 3 week period, they then get a certificate that's done that. Now that for me, I think if that came out, yeah. You see them all scrambling now, writing it all down, trying to do it. They'll be all sat in the boxes thinking, I'm going to do this
but
shit.
But no, but I mean, I think, yeah, that's the factor. I don't, you know, to some extent, I find the provider almost detrimental to the process.
Absolutely.
You know, I know how to turn someone into, you know, a hairdresser or a barber. I can get them through. You know, I've kept lots of mine. I've got several that have started with me at 16, one of whom is running one of our stores for me. You know, fantastic. I know we can do that. But we're very kind of handcuffed to this process. Mm. And as soon as they finished and got that certificate, we then do another 3 or 4 months of just getting all the stuff in that we couldn't because of the provider. So for us to be able to do that and seek funding, you know, I really don't buy into why we do all the work and we get none of the money.
I completely agree with you.
I do all the work. We get £500 of a £9,500 grant.
Yeah.
It's not encouraging. I mean, for me, I really buy into apprenticeships. And I think for me, it's the only way I really see making good quality, strong people of the future.
And I think there's a bit of education to do with some barbers as well that's gone out there. This gap that you're saying is missing, the middle gap, not either young and getting them early or our ages. The middle gap is where they have a negative view of taking an apprentice on, even if for 6 months they're paying them, they're not earning money behind a chair.
Yep.
And I think we've got to change that. And the only way we can change it is by making it a bit more sexy.
Yep.
And an incentive. Mm. You know, whichever anybody says is, we're all driven by financial goals sometimes. Anybody who says that they're not, it's a load of bollocks.
Yeah. But the money's there. You know, this is the frustration. Yeah. You know, the money's being spent. Every single college, I mean, mine don't go to college. It became too depressing. We found someone that comes into us. You know, they appear 12 to 15 times over a 12, 15 month period, sit in the corner and tick. Mm.
But you're doing
all the
work.
I'm doing all the work. But that money's there. All those colleges, all those courses, all those people are all getting £9,500 to £11,500 worth of government funding. The money is swilling around out there. It's just we're not getting it.
And I think there's got to be something that changes with that, because I think that then we're never going to bridge that gap that you've talked about, which is getting barbershops and some barbers from, let's say, a 25, 26-year-old up to maybe 35, 40-year-old ones. That's the stuff they're missing. We need them, while they've got their energy to build the businesses, to take apprentices back on, that some things incentivise for them.
Mm. But do you not think it's something that our bodies, not necessarily the fellowship, I think we're up to about half a dozen of them now that are representing our industry.
Mm.
Isn't that something that they've got more power to project on? I mean, I know with VAT and what Toby's been up to, I mean, yeah, I still can't quite get my head around the fact that Northern Ireland gets a 14.5% VAT ban that we're not privy to. But there must be a bigger drum that we can be pounding for this, because everyone that signed up with these agencies are all at the top of their game. We've got more MVQers and more qualified and presumably assessors in there.
Mm-hmm.
That we should be able to send our own staff to our own industry to be signed off, rather than go to the same place that they're learning car mechanics and carpentry.
Yeah, and you find that most departments, or most heads of departments that are running that, they're running hairdressing, catering, beauty. It's kind of like gets lost a little bit. And I think still sometimes hairdressing and barbering is the poor relations in most of this. And it's not until you get in this industry. And barbering's just been a massive thing to make this industry look a little bit more cooler, sexier over the last 10 years. When we talk about the organisations, for me, and again, I have to be careful, where I would say it is that in our jobs, you just said you've got a store manager. If that store manager for 12 months, and give them 12 months, don't perform, very rarely it's target, not hitting their KPIs in terms of what you want, there is this kind of like conversation you have to have. My view is with the organisations is, you know, I think Barry's trying to pull people together, so it's one voice.
Yeah.
But then everybody wants to do their own thing as well, because they all want a bit sheriff. I'm speaking honesty.
Yeah, I think it's true. I don't disagree.
You know, from my point of view, it's kind of like, come on, guys, you either perform and get us done, or step down and got let somebody else have a go at it. Because we're not getting that kind of... And I'm not saying it's easy. So I'm quite welcome to people to message me and say, what would you do? I'm not saying for a minute it's easy. What I'm saying is, though, you have to look at the performance and say, what have you done? Where are you now? How further forward have you took it? And if you've took it enough, you can't do any more, step back.
Yeah, we've got this weird thing that, you know, certainly hairdressing, we're seeing a complete slump of people coming into apprenticeships. A lot of hairdressing salons do still run apprenticeship schemes, whether they're good or bad or indifferent, but they're running them. And, you know, obviously barbershops probably on a much lesser degree. So there's no people coming into it. In barbering, it's the complete opposite. We've got huge amounts of guys and girls that have done something else and want to come into it, want to retrain, or have just seen it as a great opportunity and a lifestyle they want to get into. There's not apprenticeships being offered. There's not anything but 12-week courses. And I don't know about you, but if I'd turned to my mother when I was 17, 18 and said, Mum, I need $8,000 to go and do a barbering course, that wouldn't have even vaguely materialised.
No.
How do you do it? We're slamming the door on this huge generation of barbers that have got an energy for this industry that hasn't been around for a decade. And we've got the biggest amount of industry bodies I've ever known. We've got six of them.
Yeah.
Not one of them, let alone the six of them, are standing up and going, we need to tackle this.
Yeah.
This is what the government is saying. They want apprentices. They want industry to come into it.
And they're putting less money into it.
And we're putting less money into it. Yeah. And even the money that is going into it isn't coming our way.
But this is what I'm saying about the people who's running the heads of the organisations who's trying to make a difference. Mm. I'm not saying they're not doing a good job, but if you're not moving any further forward, if I weren't producing new superstars for Wall, if I weren't hitting KPIs, if I weren't hitting targets, if I weren't doing what I should do, if I weren't working hard, there'd be a conversation to had. I'd know myself. You know, one of the things I always do is, you know, like you've seen when we've done big shows at Salon International. And, you know, there's some weekends where you're into, like, massive numbers. And I get in the car on the way home and I panic around about 7 o'clock at night on my way home after 12 shows, thousands and thousands of pounds. It great weekend. I worry how I'm going to beat that next year. That's the mentality that I've always had.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to the organisations. Instead of just sitting there with a massive title, when do you look at yourself and say, I've took this as far as I can. They're right what they've just said. There's more people wanting to get in, but there's less money. We're not making a difference. How can we get into making a difference? And I'm not saying I've got the answers, and I'm not saying it's easy. But at some point, you have to look at yourself.
But you've got a much better understanding of the organisations. I mean, you know, I know the fellowship has been a very big part of your career, and now really you're a very big part of the fellowships. Now, I'm not just pointing the industry. I'm not just pointing at the fellowship. There are at least six now.
Yeah, and then
what's your understanding? How do we, as an industry, get our voices heard to be taken seriously as barbers and probably hairdressers at the same time to get this apprenticeship problem solved?
And I think what you've just said is, you know, with the fellowship, we're not an organisation that goes to government, but Barry has tried, I'm talking Barry Stevens here, the CEO, has tried to get all those heads of tables. And you've had some people on here, you know, Caroline, Adam Sloan's of this world, people who have been involved and are involved, Toby Dicker, Colette Osborne's, you know, it's kind of like got them in one room together to try to work it, but it has to be stepped up. For me, it has to be stepped up. They'll not send me in, will they? Imagine me knocking doors in at Westminster.
I think sometimes you need a fucking big spoon to get a new bowl or something. And I think that's where we're at. I think everyone seems to be in their little corner.
Yeah.
And people are fighting their own battles. And I think the stronger, you know, the more united, the stronger we are.
I think you've got to press people sometimes. And you've got to press people for the right decision. Or they need to be honest and come out and say why that's not happening.
Yeah.
You know, we spoke about this off air a little bit earlier, is sometimes you have to be honest and say, you know, I've not done this. This is the reason why I've not done it. You know, I've had a fantastic mentor in my MD at Wall, is that, you know, over my years, I've tried to sometimes waffle in a meeting or a presentation.
Right.
And it's like an arbor shark.
Yeah.
It don't leave you alone if you're bullshitting. So sometimes it's kind of like, I'm not prepared here. I've not done that. you know, I'm going to take my punishment here. Yeah. I'm going to move and make sure that you get it right. So you kind of then get super prepared on everything that you do and you're honest, and it makes you honest and it makes you speak. And, you know, sometimes I'm talking about the organisation people that sometimes, you don't know, we've got eyeballs, not crystal balls. Put your hand up sometimes and ask for help. That's a sign of a strength.
Yeah.
So sometimes we should be fetching. And I know people over the years, especially state registrations, like your Errols and other hairdressers have got involved. But for me, it's not just about holding your hand and going out for a nice bit of lunch and just everybody shaking hands and doing some selfies and stuff. It's kind of like, let's get into Westminster. Let's open the doors. Let's speak to the minister who's looking after our hospitality. I think it's the hospitality minister or whoever it is. Let's see what we can do, make a difference.
But, you know, you mentioned kind of lockdown and the change that happened there. We had, you know, we were for a period included in hospitality until the funding changed, and then we were excluded from hospitality. Hospitality definitely got a bigger shake of the stick.
Absolutely.
Hospitality was set at 5% VAT for a good 12 months. I think it might have been 18 months, but it was certainly more than a year. Now, with Reclaim on 5%, they were essentially paying zero VAT for a year, whereas our industry, I'm VAT registered across the board, we were going back in for 3 months, earning a bit of money, then being shut down again, then being sent a VAT bill, full 20%. We got no breaks on that. Mm. We were treated exactly the same as everyone else. And I don't understand why, in an industry that puts billions into the coffers, is the most transparent taxed industry on the high street. Mm. You know, if the revenue want to come look in, they don't have to make an appointment. They've got to stroll through the front door.
Absolutely.
We're all there. And the only time I've seen barbers covered in the media in the run-up to this election was arsehole Tyson and Farage making big jokes about the fact that all barbershops on the high street are laundries. For money laundering.
I know.
And you're just like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
I mean, and it frustrates me so much that we're paying all this money in, much more than every restaurant, every bar. We're, as a percentage, we're paying so much more into the coffers that we're taken as a joke.
And I think, do you know what, out of everybody who said it, have you met Toby Dicker?
I did a few years ago. I've not met him since.
So Toby's very passionate about this. And because he's got his own business, The Chapel.
The Chapel, yeah.
You know, he's very into it, you know. So he's the one out of who's doing anything within, he's the one that I'd say, I kind of still back Toby in terms of what he's doing, because he's got the passion, he's got the drive, he's got the energy, and he's not going to give up. Mm. But it is an hard one, this one. It is hard, and it was hard over coming out of the pandemic, how many barbershops never reopened, or hairdressers
chains.
In particular.
I mean, huge chains that have been going for years were just shutting down over this, throughout the city.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, and it still is, looking at some empty shops that used to be... And, you know, I think we've still got to work as an industry. But do you know what frustrates me is that I see a lot of people moan about some of the topics we spoke about, but don't do nothing about it. So when you've got a voice, when you see some of these organisations asking for, sign this petition, help us to get there, you need to back it. Because instead of having like 3,000 names, what about if you had 10,000 names? There's a bit more stability to go then to the ministers and say, look, we've got 10,000 people that's backing this. You need to listen to us. Mm. We need stats.
Yeah. But you know? I can't believe that it didn't get that amount. You know, I can't work out what's going through anyone's head if they're wanting to pay more. They're wanting to be incurred more. You know, we've got probably one of the strongest trade mags out of most industries with HJ and with the bar, now with Modern Barber. You know, both very high-end, high-quality, good readership. So even if you just look at the numbers of their readership, converting that into a survey, into a petition, you're smashing those numbers.
Absolutely. You know, those heads of the media side, like HJ and House of Evo, they'll give you readership. So, you know, their magazines go into shops and they'll give you an honest readership where you might look at 25, 30,000 readerships out of the two magazines. Mm. Out of the four magazines that HJ, Modern Barber, Salon Evo, Barber Evo, you're probably looking at 50 to 60,000 readership. These are the ones that we need to be working with.
Those are the
with.
Numbers that we need to get them.
And this is where I would, if I helped, that's how I'd feel that I could help. That's my plus side, which is getting media partners to work with.
Yeah.
That's not happening at the minute.
No.
Because everybody wants to be a little bit, you know, oh, I'm not going to tell you, everybody should be registered because some of our clients aren't registered and, you know, they still spend money with us. Fuck that. Let's get everybody working together.
I mean, I do understand there's an awful lot of, certainly with the self-employed model, there's an awful lot of business out there that aren't VAT registered. And I understand that, and that's fair play. But, you know, the whole thing of, you know, they might not be coming for you now, but if we should stand up and help each other, because they could come for you at a later date. And that's my issue, that I think we should really be standing together. And I certainly heard in the last VAT reports that it was not enough of our industry are paying, or is a large proportion that aren't VAT registered, and that's changed and so on. But we should still be coming together. I don't see a difference between employed and self-employed. I think if we're cutting air,
we're cutting air.
In the same box. Yeah, we're in the same box.
I think the one big fear I have is for the barbers and the salon owners that are kind of like renting space now out in their shops as rented chairs. That's the one that I think that in the next 2-3 years, there's going to be an ass-kicking competition.
Sooner.
Because what's happening is that you're giving everybody a space to rent a chair. And some of these barbershops now, is they're taking $1,000 a week just from 4 chairs. Mm. And everybody that's working in them chairs are happy because they're busy and they're earning their good money.
Yeah.
But first of all, the owner's not checking whether they're doing their returns, they're not doing the right thing. They're giving them time. They're giving them a uniform. They're telling them they've got to book. Well, by giving them all those things, you are actually employing them.
Yeah,
you're giving them rules by employment. You basically, when you're doing this, you have to rent that chair and then walk away. So if they want to not turn in on a Saturday, they're still paying
rent. As long as they pay the rent, it's nothing to do with
you. But what the salon owners are saying, you've got to be in on this Saturday. So there is a big...
Well, they did dear old Pimlico Plumbers, Charlie, I can't remember his surname.
Walsh.
Is it? But from Pimlico Plumbers, huge, great plumbing organisation. All those people were all self-employed. He got done. That was it. It's like, no, they're not. They have to come to work. They have to wear your colours. They have to drive your vans.
Exactly.
They have to use your billing. They have to, you know, you just kind of go, they're employed. And these guys are employed, or a lot of them are employed. And they should be getting some holiday pay. They should be getting some pension fund. They should be. I know it's not at all sexy when you're starting your career, but they should have. I still think it's criminal that you end up with no holiday unless you're, you know, as the owner, I'm stuck with it and that's my bag. But I think if you're going to work and you're essentially working for someone, you know, you need to be, you either want the flexibility or you want the kind of compensation of a month's free holiday.
Absolutely. And what I would say to any barbershop owner or salon owner at the minute is that you do need to get legal advice on how your contract is when you become essentially a landlord within your shop. Because all you're doing is renting that area. Yeah. You cannot get involved. If you want to be involved, it's a different story altogether. If you're telling them what to wear, if you're telling them what they're going to holidays, but not paying them holidays. Mm. And if, you know, everybody's got their own PDQ machines.
I met Lacey from the Hunter Collective here. And it was just really refreshing to hear. That's exactly what it is. It's like hot desking. You know, you go in. That's your space. This is what you get for your space. You pay your month. You pay your bill. If you don't come in, you've still got a payment to make, but it makes no difference to them.
That's how it should be.
I can't remember who it was after, but I got a huge amount of irate from people about, you know, oh yeah, talk about the greedy barbershop owners who won't let you take your clients when you've been renting a chair. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. They're nothing to do with the salon owner. They're nothing to do with the barbershop owner. If you're self-employed, they're your clients. Mm. If you're employed, they're my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go near them. You leave, you start again. But if you're wandering around with a band of clients, you're self-employed.
It's
what you're about. I need a chair to do my £2,500 a week clientele.
It's a minefield though, isn't it? Because then you start going into like...
It's difficult.
Each person who's renting that space is who's doing their social media. Is it in conjunction with the salon? Mm. You know, it's a real... I've never touched it
really because I don't think I've got the brains for it. You know, I like things straightforward, done.
I'm too much of a control.
And I couldn't, it'd drive me mad. I know that I'd get upset if someone phoned in sick and I was just watching all these clients be cancelled.
I'd want everybody employed. I want to put them on a great incentive. Mm. The top barbers that are that'd be working for me, there'd be a percentage shares. So you're tying them in, but everybody would have performance targets, whether that's financial. I love working with KPIs as well. Right. So for instance, you know, we want you to have 50 new clients a month or 10 new clients a month. How many of your clients did you convert from a cut to a colour? Those are the, I love to look at those stats, because eventually if you've done your management stuff right, all those KPIs will add up to a financial finish anyway. Yeah. And sometimes people say, what do you mean you targeted them on, you know, how many clients they've rebooked? So it's like, that is a good KPI to have.
Yeah,
you know, that's a different ally. How many posts did you, giving them a target on, could you get 10,000 people watching your reels? But again, making sure that you've got a social media company or a PR company that actually manages that.
Yeah. And that's it. I think if you've got a PR company or a social media manager, it is, you they need to have their KPIs as well to carry along with it. I mean, interestingly, I mean, going on to that, if you're, it really does intrigue you, we've now got a huge amount of barbers now are doing online bookings. Most, I mean, we'll have a walk-in if it walks in, but generally when they walk in, we're already booked. But it's all online. I'm not sure everyone really understands what they can do with that information.
Well, what do you mean?
From a business point of view. So that's exactly where you're getting your KPIs from, is watching what's coming through your till. I'm intrigued now. That's maybe something for another another show, that what that information's worth to you, rather than, you know, online bookings are a very new thing to the barbering industry, but the data that goes with it and the knowledge that's there to create those KPIs.
Do you know what? If I weren't doing this job where I'm doing, one of my jobs would be as a consultant to businesses.
I was going to say, that's what's kind of needed out there,
isn't it? I'm kind of like, I hate this when you walk in and you can't fit them in. It drives me mad. Imagine when you go to a restaurant, you walk in and it's like, okay, it might be like 7 o'clock and there's like four tables busy, but there's seven free. I get it that people's booked in.
Yeah.
But speak to me and tell me, saying, look, I've got that table at 8. I need it back at 8. It's 7:15. Do you think? And I'll go, as long as you can serve us, we're coming in for a main course, a glass of wine, we'll be out, it's yours.
Yep.
Instead of turning me away.
Yeah.
And I'll always say to barbershops and hairdresser shops, I know you've got booking systems, I know you've got them, but come on, when somebody walks in, they want an haircut, they're wanting to change the day. You make them feel better when you do it. So when you turn them away, and I've watched people do it, they don't even do it with a smile. You know?
I know, I mean, I must admit, Al's a very, very good at getting them booked in.
Yeah.
Or even if it is mentally busy when they arrive, and obviously we don't have a reception, we got a big QR code on the wall, so that all they've got to do is scan that and they can book out their next appointment immediately.
But don't be scared. I'd be kind of like saying, all right, mate, we can't fit you in. I've tried every possibility. Unless you want to sit there for an hour and a half, we can't get you. But even down to the point of saying, look, I know my mate who's got a shop like literally half a mile down the road. Let me see if he can fit you in. He'd still want to come back to you because of what you've just done there. Don't be scared of doing that shit.
Yeah, we haven't. I think hairdressing's had a few business people turn up over the years. But there's no one doing it with barbers at the moment.
No. And I think you've got to gone through industry. Both sides. I've done both sides. Shop, commercial, brand.
Oh, mate, you got no spare time? What's the matter with you?
No, I've got no time. We're running out of time.
I reckon we're going to probably do a couple more of these at some time over the future, Simon. I certainly hope so. I think we've covered a fair bit of ground. We've certainly got, well, I guess we've already thrown out an offer to Toby to come on and talk to us. So hopefully that'll happen. But yeah, let's see if things continue on. But your advice would be join the fellowship, join these industries.
Yeah,
these...
I mean, obviously the fellowship's not just about what we're trying to do. The fellowship's just a fantastic networking place where you can get, like, once you're a member, there's loads of education there. But these the platforms you can work on and the people you mix with. It's kind of always been the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
So there's some great offers on at the minute to get involved with that.
Beauty. Mate, thank you so much. Mate.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Hi there. If you've got a story or know someone with a story or have a topic that you think we should cover that we haven't yet, please get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.